ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys live from the ABC broadcast box at the SCG. My name's Corbin Middlemass. My podcast co-host, former Australian opener Ed Cowan, is alongside me at Stumps on day one of the fifth and final test of the Ashes series from the SCG. Hello, Teddy.
Live. I'm going to have to watch my P's and my Q's, Corp. But I'm excited. Good to be in person. I mean, plenty of ground to cover after, you know, some pretty key talking points, I think, not just about today, but the future of this Australian cricket team.
Yeah, there's a bit to pull apart. So 3 for 211. Is the stump score on day one. So 3 for 211. England, only 45 overs, came off 15 minutes before the scheduled tea break, and play never resumed thereafter. Now, I've just got to, because we're on radio as well as being a podcast, this is what we do, radio craft, Teddy. If you are listening on the radio and you think, gee, this is the kind of chat I would listen to, ABC Cricket Podcast Monday and Friday and after every day's play. So that's where you can find us in the podcast store. Just search ABC Cricket. You cannot miss it. Initial reactions, or do you want to dive deep into specifics before we get under? Give me your overall feel as to what we've witnessed here after the first day.
I can give you a few headlines.
Yep.
One is that you leave the ground lamenting that cricket, I think, shot itself in the foot a little bit today. It rained from 2:45 to, I don't know, 3:45. There was a storm. Some light rain after that. I thought, the umpires are coming out here. The covers will be off. We'll probably get another 15 overs in. Packed it in. 5 o'clock, packed it in. So I was kind of disappointed because the cricket itself was pretty entertaining. England played as well as they have all series. Australia probably bowled as poorly as they have all series. And my other headline is, I think Australia, you wouldn't want to be in that change room without a spinner on a wicket that will deteriorate, and 3 for 200 in the other change room, because come day three, this is going to start, I think, going up and down, and it's going to start turning. And, oof, bat first at SCG. If you bat big, you don't lose.
Mm. So England comfortably on top.
Well ahead.
Wow. 3 for 211 stumps on day one here at the SCG. So state of the game. England on top in what we've seen here with this unbroken 154 unstand. I'll take you through the day. So clearly, we arrive at the SCG. Australia said yesterday through Steve Smith that all options are on the table. And you thought, wow, we're picking from a broad squad here. There's 14 or 15 in the squad. Usually we get even 12, or they'll narrow it down a little bit for what we're anticipating. Often we get an 11, 24 hours out from the first ball, and that certainly wasn't the case. Then we get to the toss. England win that. They decide to bat first. The Aussie team sheet comes through, and Bo Webster's in, which perhaps isn't stunning in itself, and yet the fact that obviously no spinner on the sheet means that he comes in for Jai Richardson. That's the one change. Webster for Richardson. Batting extends down to number 8, and for the first time since 1888, Australia don't play a frontline spinner at the SCG.
I mean, I was in a state of shock at the time, and I still kind of feel much the same. And we can kind of pick this apart. So no spinner more broadly. I think, you know, the things that we've got to cover. What does this mean for Todd Murphy specifically? What does it mean for how this Australian team shapes up? And they're big picture questions that we can touch on. But what does it mean for this test match? So there were reports of 7 mils of grass, I think, yesterday. The mower came out this morning. I think there was a directive pretty firmly to take that off. It looks an absolute belter.
So by the toss, they were saying 5 mil.
Okay, so five.
So it's had a haircut overnight, as you said.
With some cracks, it's hard. The ball was flying through. There's good pace. At what stage do you think we're not going to pick a spinner? So the only thing it says to me is Steve Smith, as the captain, does not want to bowl or doesn't trust Todd Murphy. So what's he doing in the squad? If he's not the next best spinner, or you don't think that he's good enough to play in a test match at the SCG that is going to turn, what are we doing here? And so I was absolutely flabbergasted. So the Bo Webster selection, I like that he's playing, but it's probably like for Cameron Green, realistically, and a spinner plays. And maybe you play an extra fast bowler. So I've now got two medium pace bowlers generally, Boland and Nisa, one of pace, no spinner, Cameron Green, who hasn't been really at his best with the ball and, you know, is bowling sporadically, and a part-time medium pacer in Beau Webster. So if you ask me about the selection of this team, I've kind of stopped trying to guess how they do it, because I'm not suggesting that's out of a hat. But if you ask the general layperson, I don't know what they know that the rest of us don't. Because if you were like, hey, there's 5 mils of grass on the SCG and we're not going to pick a spinner, what do you reckon about that? I just don't know, apart from the three people in the room, anyone in the world that is going, that's a good idea.
So why the feeling that this is a Steve Smith decision, for example? So Jason Gillespie said the same thing, immediate reaction.
Interesting.
This speaks to me that Steve Smith essentially doesn't believe in Todd Murphy, doesn't want him in the squad. I mean, you can trace it back to Jamaica. They left out Nathan Lyon. Cummins was in charge then. They did the same thing in Brisbane, obviously no Lyon. And it raises another question is, yeah, if Lyon was fit and available, would he be copping the same treatment? Well, they'd left him out two of the three previous test matches before he got hurt in Adelaide. He did get the start there, and now we've had no spinner in Melbourne and Sydney. I mean, take us inside a dressing room. The captain, obviously, yeah, before a test match starts, even though they're not an official part of the selection committee, which is a three-man panel in...
Make no mistake, they're in that.
Yep.
But it's up to them as to the team, the captain, the coach, the team that takes the ground in consultation with the selectors. So selectors pick the squad.
Yep.
The captain and the coach will then usually get together. I'm not saying this happens in the Australian team. This is a usual situation. Here is the team. Because ultimately, when you are on the field, it is the captain's responsibility. And if the captain says, well, he can play, but I'm not going to bowl him, everyone looks around and thinks, hang about.
Yeah.
Well, what are we playing him for? We'll pick the guy that who would you bowl? You know, and so it is a powerful position. And I guess the thing that comes to mind is, this is the part-time captain. So if you're looking at the greater picture, Nathan Lyon at the end of his career has a 15-centimetre tear in his hamstring. We need to find another spinner, full stop. I find it very hard that someone didn't tap Steve Smith or whoever on the show and say, you're going to play a spinner, because we need to understand what this kid's about. He's 23 or 24.
Yep.
Maybe he's not the guy. And we can dissect why or why not he's not the guy in these conditions. Well, if he's not the guy, find someone who is the guy. Mm. So you can kind of tell that I'm quite riled up, because I just don't fundamentally understand. And I don't know if they did a presser and have come out and said why. But they are, make no mistake, I'm happy to say on day one of the test, they will regret that decision. And it might not be tomorrow, but it will definitely be sometime on day three or sometime on day four. They will think, Travis Head may have bowled 15 overs by then. Who knows?
So did they misread the wicket, or they don't believe in Murphy, or both?
I think a little bit of both. Well, there's enough. No, they couldn't have possibly misread the wicket. There are enough people that have played enough test cricket here and enough cricket at the SCG more broadly to understand that it's hard. So it's not plasticine on top. There's no moisture. And it's going to break up. There are already little cracks in the wicket. So it's not going to hold together for 5 days. Maybe a little bit of rain today. But this is what you'd call a quintessential / perfect SCG wicket. It will go up and down and it will turn.
Which is interesting. When Smith spoke at the toss, he alluded to the fact that he feels like the pitch will do that, that it will break up. He also said, we feel like we've been backed into a corner in the way the pitchers are prepared as to the team that we pick, which... You felt like the two things almost contradicted each other a little bit.
I don't understand that second comment at all. That makes no sense to me.
Yep. That's the team they've gone with. So 1888, that's a long time ago. I mean, we talk about, you know, precedents and records and all the rest of it, but that's the last time the Aussies played a test match here and they didn't field a frontline spin.
So I was lucky enough to interview Peter Taylor at the tea break in the Cricket New South Wales box. And so, you know, there's a great story around Peter who... You know, 1987, he made his debut here and was man of the match. I'll give you a trivia question in a second. But I was asking him who he thinks the best young spinner is, and he gave quite an astute answer. He said, I like the look of Todd Murphy, but he strikes me as someone who would be more successful on the subcontinent because he bowls around the ball. Mm-hmm. The person they should have picked was Corey Roccioli. He bowls over the ball, and in Australia that is far more successful. And it was just a perfect answer. And he said, well, you know, and he's done well in Shield cricket. And I said, well, he's actually been the leading Shield wicket taker.
Yeah.
Two seasons ago, he was the leading spinner last season. So if you're going like for like, who's the next one? And we don't know what goes into the selection bucket. Todd Murphy's a good bowler. You do get a sense that his game has probably regressed a little bit with his T20 cricket. He bowls into the wicket and he bowls around the ball. Maybe that they didn't like the look in the nets. They didn't think that he was the guy to get anyone out. Well, if that's the case, he shouldn't be in around the group. You need an option of someone who you're going to play.
Mm. It's staggering that we're in this position, and he's toured around for the last two test matches.
I feel sorry for it.
Yeah, and yet he's...
How do you think he feels?
Yep.
Because it's actually quite clear, if the wicket's going to turn and I'm not playing, hey, can I just have some feedback, captain, coach, selectors? Am I ever going to play? What could I do better? Or, you know, how am I... Like, so that would be a lonely place to be in the hotel tonight if you're Todd Murphy. And he's young. I feel really sorry for him, to be honest.
We talked about the Usman Khawaja presser the other day and the conversation that he had with Andrew McDonald, and sort of alluded to the fact that McDonald had even raised the possibility of him going through to India when he went to him and essentially said he was retiring. And immediately at that point, he thought, whoa, well, the criticism of this panel has been they like the experience, they like the guys they've got, they have struggled to regenerate the team. And we had the chat only just a couple of days ago about, you know, whose responsibility is it? And I asked Mike Baird this essentially earlier today, and he essentially said, oh, look, you know, everyone that's involved and all the rest of it as to what the accountability looks like to make sure that this team regenerates. And as you touched on, you're not going to get too many better opportunities. Series is one. You're at the SCG on a pitch that's got 5 mil of grass. If ever there's a time to try and find out about a couple of new guys, and particularly a new spinner, that this would have been the time, and yet they let the opportunity pass them by.
What is there to lose?
Mm.
Kind of reframe the question as to what are we learning about Michael Nisa today that we don't already know? And so, yeah, fine cricketer has done well-ish in this series at times. What are we waiting for? What else is there to wait for? I'm rambling because I'm kind of lost in my own thinking as to how they got to the answer they got to.
Yep. Are you worried about how this team turns over?
Yeah, increasingly so, for sure. From what I saw today, absolutely. Because that was Australia's worst day of cricket, I thought, probably for the series. I thought tactically they were all over the place. Deep points and then bowling to deep point. And that often happens the way. You bowl to your field. If you've got protection, you think that's a safe ball. As opposed to, hey, I'm going to pitch it up. We're going to have catching covers. They were so scared. They played so defensively so quickly. At 3 for 63, Harry Brook walked out to bat and there was a long off to Scott Boland. Give it, like... My mind gets blown. Sure, if he hits one or two or three and he gets away, by all means. But on a good wicket, but on a seeming wicket, I kind of understand that, because you want him playing hard at the ball and it brings the catches in.
Yep.
Here, the safer shot is present the bat, which he did. Ball hits bat, goes to deep cover for one. And he gets off strike and all of a sudden he's a runner ball 70. Hasn't played a shot in anger, really. And Australia did not look like taking a wicket for the best part of 3.5 hours.
So is this... I asked Mitchell Starc this after the Melbourne test, and he bristled in response about, you know, is there a sense of complacency here? And you hear Andrew McDonald talk about the fact that, hey, the Ashes was done at 3-0. And you think, if the senior coach is coming out and saying that, surely that even on some level, whether it's 15% or 10%, that sort of permeates through the dressing room. And then you've had a test matches over in 2 days. You're left scratching your head thinking, would Australia have batted that way in the second innings if the series was still live? And then the same thing you're talking about in the way that they went about it, you know, tactically and with the ball today, whether there's some kind of underlying feeling thinking, look, what's all this worth? This is done.
Who knows? You'd like to think not. I mean, unless you're inside the head of the players, you would like to think not. But I guess the one thing that keeps players going is it being a little bit on edge and some tension. And tension comes, performance-wise, when you know that someone is there to take your spot. And the unwillingness of any changeover of the team or willing to drop people probably suggests that complacency comes in many forms, and it's manifesting itself in these two test matches that mean a little bit less.
So the balance between feeling like, hey, I've got the support of everyone and they believe in me, weighed against, you know, hey,
I think a little bit of positive tension is is good to bring out high performance. Oh, they would probably disagree with me, as you know, they're aiming for cohesion and happiness over tension. That's fine, and you know, the record that they have provided probably suggests that in the short term that they've been right. But you watch them play today, and you thought that was mediocre. And England played well. Where's that been? There was no craziness, and the wicket was good by all means. But they looked world-class players. The bat looked 2 metres wide from Joe Root and Harry Brook today.
Would there be a mixed feeling? I mean, we're talking about it from an Australian point of view. They've already won it and everything else, and we're sitting here going, oh, but I don't know about what I'm seeing now. I imagine the England fans would be thinking the same thing, wouldn't they? Well, they'd be thinking, gee, we lost the Ashes in 11 days. We win a test match for the first time in 15 years. And now we're watching these guys go at it who are, you know, two of the world's best batters. They're literally ranked 1-2 in the rankings. There'd be people sitting there today from an English point of view thinking, imagine if we batted like this at the start of the series.
Well, let's come to that. But let's just remind ourselves of a couple of things. They were effectively 1 for 100 in Perth in the second innings.
Yep.
Should have cantered that test in pretty good, what turned out to be pretty good batting conditions. Served it up on a plate, cracked the salt, cracked the pepper, and handed it back to Australia. So 1-0. In Brisbane, they got the dropsies because they hadn't prepared with the pink ball effectively. What we're seeing at the back end of the series is what we should have seen the first test if they came out here and did some actual graft. And we talked about it at the time around the preparation. And we called it out and said it is unlikely that their best cricket will be played in the first three tests. Well, the series was done before we saw anything like we saw, you know, even the back half of Adelaide when Stokes was playing so well and, you know, there was a little glimmer. It took them 8 days of competitive cricket to get in the series. The series was done by then.
Yeah. And Brendan McCullum is really without a leg to stand on because he's come out and already admitted that essentially the preparation wasn't ideal. And yeah, I don't know whether success here makes you feel better or worse from an English point of view, and what the worth of 3-2 as opposed to 4-1 would be at the end of the series. Joe Root specifically, I find a fascinating conversation, and mainly as a sportscaster, and we sit around the pub debates and everything else, but felt like this was a real legacy series for Joe Root. You know, he'd never won in Australia, period, any test match, let alone won a series. And so he comes down under this year, and all the talks, you know, he's never scored 100 here, he's never won a test match. Well, he got 100 in Brisbane. Say he gets another 100 here, and the way he's batting, you think he's going to. He's 72, not out. All of a sudden, he gets 200 down under. He's won a test match, albeit it was a bit of a crapshoot. It was, you know, all over in 2 days. And you think, you look maybe at the end of his career, you look back on the accounting numbers, and you go, yeah, he got a couple of hundreds in Australia, and he won a test match there. So apart from not being able to say he never did it, it doesn't really overall change the conversation or the narrative around him, though, does it? It's not like there's been this, you know, banner, prove him wrong type series from Joe Root. And really, he's at this stage where what's he got left to prove at this stage with the series done?
Yes and no. I'm hesitant to kind of dive into this because there's a world where he gets 250.
Yep.
The wicket's flat and the bowling's kind of a little mundane or flavourless. And this guy is a world-class fill-your-boots batter. And so he might get 250 tomorrow. England might win this by an innings. And guess what? The narrative changes pretty quickly. They've won two tests on the trot. Root got 200s in, including a massive double in three tests.
And he'll be thinking, in 4 years, I'll only be 38.
That's for sure. But let's pause that and let time play out, I think.
Yep. Okay. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming days there. But he's 72, not out at stumps. Brooks on 78, 3 for 211. England. No cricket after 2:55 p.m. So essentially they came off 15 minutes before the scheduled tea break due to bad light. The floodlights on, the four shadows appearing, and they never got back out there. There were moments where it wasn't raining in the final session, and yet whether it was light, whether it was rain, whether it was incoming rain, no cricket for the 44,500 that were in the house up after 3 p.m.
We're also sitting here, 15 minutes after a scheduled stumps.
Yeah.
And it's bright.
It is.
It's not raining.
Yep.
And so they call it at 5 o'clock because the covers take 40 minutes to take off. Come on. Come on, folks. So I just don't understand. I mean, maybe the only people cheering are the Cricket Australia commercial team who, you know, tickets on day four have been sold. So this will go 4.5 days, maybe, more than likely now, realistically. And so it'll be good for the test in that sense, but those that turned up to day one, I think, got shortchanged a little bit.
That was going to be my next question. Would you feel like you got bang for your buck if you bought a ticket today?
Nope.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Where you think, am I going to go back next time? And
what about the members that queued up at 6 a.m.? I think they got their... Well, a few of them are still here, actually, on the tinnies. So they're probably getting... They're happy.
Jeez. But it's... I mean, that is a concern, though, isn't it, for the modern game? And you think we've done it in other formats of the game. This is something where we can very quickly look at what we're doing T20 cricket and ODI cricket, for example, and the attitude in T20 cricket is show must go on.
The show always goes on.
Yeah.
There is no curtain draw on T20 cricket. It can be pouring with rain. And yes, there's a question around the wicket, but at no stage was the rain, if that was shield cricket, you're not coming off. Mm. That was a light, barely a drizzle at times, and we had the full covers on, covering the square and the run-ups, and it was though we're in the monsoon of Dharamshala or something. It was crazy.
Mm. What do the Aussies need to do tomorrow to turn it around?
Whew, I mean... I think they need to make them hit down the ground more. The balls that were laid off to third man and deep point. So bowl a bit straighter, bowl a little bit fuller, set more catches in front of the wicket, and for the moment, pray for a mistake.
Mm. Over under 3.5 days?
Mate, I'm overs on the 3.5 days. Tell you what is getting very firmly in the spotlight.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you'll have all your stats. What's Harry Brooks' series average to date, not excluding the 70-odd not out?
This is one of our pre-test conversations.
Yeah, because I think I'm going to take the money here because he might get 252.
I felt pretty good after Melbourne. So we moved the line, I think, didn't we, from 30 to 35?
Yeah.
Leading into the series, leading into this test, he was averaging 33.
Mate, no, that is easy money. I'm taking you.
He's gonna get
to the cleaners.
Did you play with him at University of New South Wales?
I did not because I was at the University of Sydney. You're better.
Two different clubs.
You're better than that. You are better than that.
There you go.
Aren't you?
Too many universities. How do you have
only two?
How do you have two universities?
One's a polytechnic and one's an actual university.
That's really good. In 20-team competition, you shouldn't have two university sides. But he did play out here though, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. For a period of time.
Quite a few of them.
Did a lot of these guys. Yeah. Duckett and Crawley, Bethel.
Yeah. Served them well this series, didn't it?
Yeah. all played in Sydney. Well, they might feel their boots here when play gets underway tomorrow. So it's going to be an early start at 10 a.m. local time. If you are rolling up on day two, you'll obviously see Joe Root bat. He's 72 not out. Brooks on 78, 3 for 211. England with no play after 3 p.m. on the opening day. The McGrath Foundation, so a little shout out for that. Have you got your pink shirt ready to go for day three?
Absolutely. Made a donation today. Got my little handkerchief pocket.
Your virtual squares? Your virtual seats?
Haven't bought a virtual seat.
You can tell I've been on F too long. I said pocket squares. I'm like, virtual seats, virtual squares. So you can do that, obviously, through pinktest.com.au. So 138,500 virtual seats have already been purchased. $3.45 million raised. So the aim this year is 480. That's what they're hoping to get to. This is the 18th edition of the Pink Test, which is incredible, isn't it? The way that it's run for such a long period of time. There's obviously the red test, which takes place in England nowadays, which also raises money for important cause as well. So it's caught on right around the world, hasn't it? This concept and what the McGrath Foundation's been able to do to raise vital funds and put on cancer care nurses to homes right around the country. You would have played in one?
Played in two.
Two. Mm. You got your pink baggies still?
No, they auction them off.
Wow. So there you go.
Yeah. But it is quite an emotional day, day three. You obviously walk out. I played with Glenn McGrath. I'd met Jane but didn't know her that well. And, you know, to look him in the eye, shake his hand, it's a sad moment.
That's all in front of us. We'll do this again tomorrow night, Teddy.
Can't wait.
And the night after that, the way it's heading. So England 3 for 211 at Stumps on the opening day. This has been the ABC Cricket Podcast. Find it wherever you get your pods. We'll be on air on ABC Radio for Grandstand Cricket tomorrow morning from 9:30 a.m. local time for a 10 a.m. start.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.